The Katra Podcast, conversations for the curious essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI.
Welcome back to the Deep Dive. You know, we spend so much of our lives chasing things, right? More money, a better job title, moving to that perfect city.
Yeah, all because we think those external things, those circumstances, will finally, you know, lock in happiness for good.
But if you're listening, you've probably figured out it doesn't really work like that. That feeling, it fades.
Oh, absolutely. That satisfaction spike. It's real, but it's so temporary. It's almost cruel. You put everything into these big external goals.
Mm-hmm.
And then a few months down the line, emotionally, you're kind of back where you started.
Exactly. So today we're going to dig into, well, basically the manual for breaking that cycle. It's Dr. Sonja Lyubomirsky's really important book, The How of Happiness.
Yeah, a truly definitive work.
So we're not looking for wishful thinking here. We want a strategy. What's the big idea? The core insight Lyubomirsky gives us, it boils down to what she calls the 40% solution. And this is really revolutionary when you think about it. Her research shows that a huge chunk of our long-term happiness, a full 40%.
40, that's massive.
It is. And it's not fixed by our genes, which is a big part, or our life situation. It's determined entirely by our own, like, intentional choices and actions, day-to-day stuff.
Okay, so that changes everything.
Right. It means we stop seeing happiness as, like, this passive lottery we hope to win and start seeing it as a skill, something you can actually learn and practice.
That's a fundamental shift, isn't it? It moves the question from, okay, what's missing in my life, to what can I actively do today?
Precisely.
But, okay, let's talk about the elephant in the room. That 50% genetic set point, I mean, if half of it is just locked in by your DNA, isn't that, well, kind of discouraging? Like, why bother fighting it?
That's a really critical question, and she addresses it head on. So, yes, the 50%, that determines your sort of natural baseline. Think of it like your emotional thermostat setting.
Okay. My default temperature.
Exactly. But the 40%, that's your leverage.
Yeah.
That's where you have control. You know, you can't change your height, right?
Yeah.
But you can absolutely change how fit you are.
Ah, good analogy.
And the book really demonstrates through research that by working on that 40%, you can genuinely, permanently raise your own happiness floor. You're not stuck at the default.
Right. And the person telling us this isn't just, you know, some guru with a nice philosophy. Tell us a bit about Dr. Lyubomirsky herself.
Yeah, she's a real heavyweight in the field.
Mm-hmm.
She's a distinguished professor of psychology at the University of California, Riverside, a leading figure in what's called positive psychology.
Okay, so academic credentials. But what makes her work stand out from, like, the tons of other self-help books promising happiness?
It's the science. It's the rigor.
The scientific backing.
Exactly. She brings the mindset and the methods of a laboratory scientist to studying well-being.
Yeah.
Her authority comes from, like, over 2 decades of serious empirical research.
Wow, 2 decades.
Yeah, running controlled experiments, getting funding from places like the National Institute of Mental Health. She wasn't just thinking about happiness. She was testing specific strategies.
Testing what works and maybe what doesn't.
Precisely. Testing which specific happiness-boosting activities are effective, who they work best for, and crucially, under what conditions. It's incredibly thorough.
So this really is the science-backed manual for anyone who's kind of tired of the fluffy, feel-good advice that just doesn't stick long-term.
That's exactly right.
Okay, so let's get into the structure of her idea. Most people, when they think about happiness, they probably assume it's like 80% circumstances, right? Getting the new house, the big promotion, the perfect partner.
Yeah, that's the common assumption. But her research completely flips that.
Really?
Totally. One of her most striking findings is how happiness breaks down. It's that famous happiness pie chart. 3 slices, and they're surprisingly unequal.
Okay, lay it on us. What's the biggest piece?
The biggest piece, 50%, is that set point we talked about.
Right.
Your genetic baseline. Pretty much fixed.
Right, 50% genetics. Got it. So where does all that effort we put into changing our lives fit in? The job, the money.
That fits into the second slice, and this is the shocker. Only 10% is life circumstances.
Wait, just 10% for all that stuff?
Yeah.
Wealth, health, marriage, career?
Just 10%. It's incredibly small. And Lyubomirsky argues that focusing all our energy here, well, it often fails precisely because any satisfaction boost we get is so incredibly fleeting. We adapt too quickly.
So me obsessing over finding the exact right shade of throw pillows for inner peace, that was just my temporary 10% talking.
A beautiful 10%, maybe. But yeah, temporary. Which brings us, Finally, to the really hopeful part, the biggest slice we can actually do something about.
The 40%.
40% intentional activity. This huge slice is all about our choices, our behaviors, our thought patterns, what we actively do.
Okay.
And the book is essentially a guide to tackling this 40%. It even starts with, like, helping you figure out your own personal happiness baseline before you even jump into the strategies.
Which makes sense. Know where you're starting from.
Right. And then it gives you this toolkit. 12 specific, science-tested intentional strategies.
Okay, let's get into that toolkit. Because I think before we can even use the solutions, we have to face the big reason why happiness gains often disappear. You mentioned it earlier. Hedonic adaptation.
Yes. This is crucial. It's basically our brain's tendency to quickly get used to positive changes.
Like the new car smell fading.
Exactly like that. Or you get the raise, you feel great for a bit, and then 6 months later, it just feels normal. It's your salary. And emotionally, you're kind of back where you were.
That's the hedonic treadmill people talk about.
That's it. And that's why pouring energy into that little 10% slice is often so inefficient, you just adapt.
Wow. Okay, so it sounds like we're almost wired for disappointment then. That sounds depressing.
It sounds harsh, I know. But it's actually thought to be, you know, an evolutionary thing. Keeps us striving, noticing new threats or opportunities.
But we can fight it.
Yes. The whole point of the book, the mission, is learning how to consciously thwart that adaptation. How to make the good feelings from that 40% intentional activity actually stick around.
Okay. How? What's the key?
The key concept for making it stick is person activity fit.
Meaning, what works for me might not work for you.
Exactly. There's no single magic bullet strategy for happiness. It's not one size fits all.
Right.
The strategies you choose have to really align with your personality, your values, your actual goals. Like, if you're super introverted, maybe forcing yourself to do big public acts of kindness every day, that might feel draining, not uplifting.
Yeah, that makes total sense. It would feel like a chore.
Right. So the book actually offers a diagnostic tool to help you figure out which of the 12 strategies are likely to be the best fit for you.
That's smart. Okay, so let's talk categories. She groups them, right? Starting with cognitive tools, stuff happening inside our heads.
Yep, managing your thoughts and focus. And maybe the most powerful cognitive tool she discusses is expressing gratitude.
Gratitude journaling, saying thank you, that kind of thing.
Exactly. Things like keeping a gratitude journal, writing gratitude letters. It works because it forces you to consciously notice and appreciate the good things you'd otherwise just, well, adapt to and take for granted.
Ah, so it directly counteracts the hedonic adaptation for the positives.
Precisely. It sort of reboots your appreciation level. It shifts your focus from scarcity, from what's missing, to abundance, to what you already have.
Okay, that's powerful. And she pairs that with cultivating optimism, right? Like that best possible selves diary idea.
Yes, where you regularly write about and visualize your ideal future. It builds hope and positive expectation. But just as important as adding those positive thoughts.
It's stopping the negative ones.
You got it. Actively working to stop avoiding overthinking and social comparison. Rumination and comparing yourself to others are major happiness drains.
Oh, yeah. Comparison is the thief of joy. Isn't that the saying?
That's the one. And the research backs it up completely. So those are some key cognitive tools. Then there are the relational ones.
Connecting with others.
Absolutely. And the evidence here is overwhelming. Strong social connections are one of the single biggest predictors of long-term well-being. It's fundamental.
Which probably links directly to another strategy, practicing acts of kindness.
It does. And what's fascinating is that doing kind things for others, it gives a significant happiness boost to the giver, not just the receiver.
Why is that?
Well, it seems to boost your self-perception. You start seeing yourself as a good, capable, generous person. It reinforces a positive self-image, makes you feel effective in the world.
That makes sense. Okay, but relationships aren't always smooth sailing. What about when things go wrong?
That's where learning to forgive comes in. And this is often misunderstood.
How so? People think it's about letting the other person off the hook.
Exactly. But Lubomirsky frames it differently, based on the science. Forgiveness isn't really a gift to the offender. It's a gift to yourself. Because holding on to anger, resentment, grudges, it takes a huge amount of mental energy and creates chronic stress in your body. Forgiveness is the mechanism to release yourself from those corrosive emotions. It frees up your mental space.
Untethering yourself. Okay, I get that. What about strategies focused more on the present moment?
Yeah, she covers those too. Two big ones are flow experiences and savoring.
Flow. That's like getting lost in an activity.
Totally. Being completely absorbed in something challenging but manageable, like playing music, gardening, coding, rock climbing, time just disappears. it's intrinsically rewarding, feels great in itself.
And savoring, that sounds like the opposite of adapting.
It is. Savoring is about intentionally paying attention to and appreciating positive moments. Really tasting that delicious meal. Soaking in a beautiful sunset, lingering on a compliment.
Mindfully enjoying things.
Yes, it stretches out the positive feeling, makes it last longer, embeds it more deeply. It's an active skill of appreciation.
She also talks about the body's role, doesn't she? Physical activity.
Definitely. Exercise is a well-known mood booster, but she also includes this really interesting idea, simply acting happy.
You mean fake it till you make it? Like just smiling more?
Sort of. It's based on the facial feedback hypothesis. The idea is that the physical act of smiling, even if it's forced initially, sends signals back to your brain.
Muscles talking to the brain.
Yeah. Those muscle movements trigger neural pathways associated with positive emotion. So smiling more, adopting open, confident posture, it can actually create a positive feedback loop and nudge your internal state upwards.
Wow. Okay, so if we zoom out from all these specific strategies, gratitude, kindness, flow, savoring, what are the big overarching themes that emerge from her work?
I think three main messages really stand out. The first, and maybe the most powerful, is empowerment through intentionality.
Right, that 40% solution again.
Exactly. It shifts the focus away from my circumstances dictate my happiness or it's all genetics. It puts us in the driver's seat. We become the active architects of our own emotional well-being.
So happiness really is, in a big way, a choice we make. Day in, day out. Not just waiting for luck to strike.
That's the core message. And the second theme tells us how to make that choice stick. Happiness requires strategic effort.
It's not passive. It's like going to the gym.
That's a great analogy she uses. It's like physical fitness. You can't just decide to be happy and expect it to happen. It requires commitment, practice, and strategy.
And part of that strategy is fighting the adaptation thing.
Yes. And that involves using optimal timing and variety with your chosen activities. This is key to keep things fresh and effective.
What do you mean, like, timing?
Okay, so say you choose practicing acts of kindness, doing 5 kind things all in one go on Monday morning. The research suggests that's less effective than spreading those 5 acts out across the whole week.
Ah, so spacing it out maintains the novelty, keeps it from becoming routine.
Exactly. It prevents you from adapting too quickly to the positive feeling. Variety helps too. Maybe one day it's a compliment, the next day it's helping someone, the day after it's a small gift. Mix it up.
That's a really practical, important detail for making this stuff actually work long term.
Okay, and the third big theme.
The third one is woven through almost everything. The primacy of social connection.
Relationships again.
The science is just overwhelming on this. Nurturing genuine connections with family, friends, community. It's not just nice to have. It's arguably the fundamental pillar of a happy, meaningful life.
It really seems like so many of the strategies tie back to that in some way.
They really do.
Okay, so the book is obviously grounded in serious science, but it probably has some memorable lines too, right? Some wisdom nuggets?
Oh, absolutely. It's very well written. A few key ideas really stick.
Like what?
Well, the core agency statement is probably the most important. The data is clear. A full 40% of our happiness is in our hands.
A big number.
Determined not by our genes or our life circumstances, but by our daily intentional activities. It just drives home where our power lies.
Yeah, that's empowering. What else? I also like how she reframes happiness itself. The belief that happiness is a permanent state that you find is a myth.
Okay.
Happiness is the fruit of deliberate effort and practice. It really underscores that it's an ongoing process, not a destination you arrive at.
Right. It's the how, not the what or where. It's something you do.
Exactly. And then there's the crucial point about personalization, which saves you from just blindly following advice. There is no single magic bullet for happiness.
Mm-hmm.
The key is to find the right happiness strategies for you. This person activity fit is what determines whether a new practice will stick.
That explains why sometimes you try something from a self-help book and it just falls flat. It wasn't the right fit for you.
Precisely. You need that alignment.
So, okay, let's make this super practical for someone listening right now. How do they apply this? Where do they start?
The first step is definitely creating a personalized happiness program. Don't try to boil the ocean and do all 12 strategies at once. That's a recipe for failure.
Right. Over.
Yeah. Start with that person activity fit idea. Really think about yourself. What are your strengths?
Yeah.
Your interests? Your values? What feels authentic to you?
Use the diagnostic in the book or just really reflect.
Exactly. Maybe you realize you're more introverted.
Okay.
then maybe intensive social strategies aren't the best starting point. Perhaps something like private gratitude journaling or savoring nature walks would give you a bigger happiness bang for your buck initially.
So pick just a few, like 2 to 4 strategies.
That's what she recommends. Pick 2 to 4 strategies that genuinely resonate, that feel like you.
Okay, I've picked gratitude and savoring. Now what?
Now you schedule it. You make it concrete. If it's gratitude, maybe it's the 3 good things. Journal every night before bed. Put it in your calendar. Treat it like an important appointment.
Make it a habit, a non-negotiable.
Yes, that structure is key. And doing this groundwork, building these habits, it also builds resilience for when things get tough.
How does that work? Application and resilience.
Well, when you face a setback, lose a job, have a relationship difficulty, instead of just getting sucked into negative rumination, which the book strongly advises against.
Right.
You actually have a pre-built toolkit of coping strategies. You can consciously choose to practice optimism, maybe do that best possible selves exercise to visualize overcoming the challenge, or lean into acts of kindness to boost your self-worth.
Ah, so it gives you constructive actions to take instead of just spinning your wheels in negativity.
Exactly. It provides structure, hope, and a sense of agency even when circumstances are difficult. It's like emotional self-defense training.
That's a really valuable application. Okay, so wrapping up. If you had to distill Lubomirsky's decades of research into one final lasting insight, what would it be?
I think the most profound takeaway is that we've probably dramatically underestimated our own capacity for happiness. It's not some elusive mystery, nor is it just for the lucky few.
Mm-hmm.
It's a skill. It's a daily practice. It's something to be actively cultivated. We truly are the architects of a significant portion of our own emotional well-being. And we have science, not just wishful thinking, to guide us.
Yeah, I really like that architect metaphor. My final thought is kind of similar. This book, it doesn't offer a treasure map to some mythical pot of gold called happiness.
No.
Instead, it feels like she's giving us a scientifically validated gym membership for the mind. The real secret isn't finding the treasure. It's doing the consistent, intentional work guided by that crucial person activity fit principle.
Well put.
It puts the power back in your hands right now to start building a happier life 40% at a time.
A very powerful and importantly practical message.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.